Go on.
She was the older, very beautiful sister of another boy. I was hiding from the families who'd come to visit, telling myself I required study.
But she was simply trying to ignore what she did not have yourself. He looked to her.
Yes.
She smiled, small and sad. I know that well. He ignored the comparison, pressing forward.
She followed me. No one was in the library. And then she was.
Lily's gaze narrowed. How old was she?
Old enough to have had a season. Old enough to know what marriage would be for her.
He thought of Lord Rowley, debauched and rich as a king.
She came to me and offered me.
I can imagine.
You can't, though.
This was the bit he had to say aloud. It was the bit that would convince her that they were not for each other, that he would never be worthy of her.
When it was over, I did what was expected to be done. I told her I would seek out her father, that I would marry her.
Lily's attention was rapt, and he loathed it, the way she saw into him, the way she understood him more than anyone ever had.
She refused.
He turned away, looked out the window over the dark London rooftops.
She laughed.
He paused, his own humorless laugh coming on the heels of the words.
Of course she laughed.
He put a hand to his neck, wishing he were anywhere but there, reliving the sordid past.
She was daughter to a Viscount, set to marry an Earl, and I was poor and untitled and Scottish, and a fucking fool.
No, Lily whispered. He did not turn, could not. Instead, he spoke to the city beyond.
Not poor any longer.
He was lost in the memory.
She paid me £10. It was enough for a month of food.
Alec. She was behind him now. She'd come off the bed, and he could hear the desperation in her voice. He had to turn to her, to look at her, to show her the truth. And so he did, seeing the tears in her eyes, hating them, loving them. What a life it would have been if it had been Lily who'd found him in the library all those years ago. And instead...
She sent her friends after that, aristocratic girls who wished for an opportunity to play in the gutter, to quench their thirst for mud, to ride the Scottish brute.
He saw the words strike her, hated himself for doing it even as he forced himself to finish.
They paid my way through school, and I played the whore. I suppose I should be grateful that, as a man, it was never the shame it would have been if I were a woman. I was revered. They whispered my name like I was their favourite toy. A fleeting fancy. Peg used to say that I was the perfect first and the worst possible last.
I do not care for her, Lily said. Peg was not the point. He pointed to the trunk on the wall, made the point again.
When I tell you that I am unworthy of you, it is not a game. It is not a falsehood. Those pristine white clothes, the hems you've embroidered with love and dedication, the damn boots with their little leather soles, they are for another man's children. The dress, it is for another man to strip from you, a man infinitely better than I.
He begged her to understand.
Don't you see, Lily, I am not the man you marry. I am the other, the beast you regret. But now you can have another, a man you deserve.
He pointed to the painting.
That thing... The painting they would have used to destroy you, it is no longer your albatross. And now you may choose a different path, far from the scandal, whatever one you wish. Don't you see? Choice is the only thing I can give to you.
She opened her mouth to answer, and he slashed a hand through the air, begging her to be silent.
Do not choose me. How are you not able to see the truth? I will never be for you. I could not even... I arrived in London with a single task, to protect you. And I couldn't. I could not keep you from them. From the gossips. From Hawkins. Dear God, you were nearly run down on Rotten Row. And that's before I took advantage of you. I should never have touched you.
He waited for the agreement to come. For the judgment. He waited for her to leave. And when she moved, he braced himself to watch her go. Except she did not leave. Instead, she came to him. He stepped back, desperate to avoid her, too broken to touch her. But the room was too small, and she was a superior opponent. She did not touch him. Worse, she reached up and removed the pins from her hair, letting it fall around her shoulders like auburn silk. His mouth went dry, and his gaze narrowed before she said, "I've something to say now, if I might." As though he could stop her, this warrior princess dressed like a pickpocket about to thieve his damn heart. "It is a great fallacy, you know, the idea that first is most meaningful, that second is, that any that follow are, that the circumstances of those early encounters somehow mean more than the one we choose forever. It is the lie the world tells us, but you have taught me to know better." She looked to him, the love in her eyes stealing his breath. "I have heard your tale, and now it is time for you to hear mine. When I am old, Alec, and I look back on the faded memories of my life, shall I tell you of what I will think? It will not be him. And when I think on my scandal, I shall be grateful for it, as it will have brought me you. But I will not think much on it, because I will be too busy thinking of you, of the days we sparred and the nights I wished we might, of the hours I spent wrapped in your plaid, wrapped in you, of the way you look at me, as though there has never been another woman in the world." And there hadn't been, not for him. She put her hand to his chest, where his heart threatened to beat from it. "Of the way you have held me, and the way I have loved you. So tell me, Alec Stewart, self-made man turned duke, strong and kind and brilliant beyond measure." She was going to destroy him with her words and her gaze. "When you are old, of whom will you think?" And suddenly, it was the only question that mattered.
"You," he said, reaching for her.
Or perhaps she reached for him. It did not matter, as she was in his arms. And it was true, he would remember her.
"Always you, forever you."
Even if this night was all he had. "None of it matters," she said, the words strong against his lips. "Not the past, not the women, not the scandal. None of it matters when we are here and we have each other." And then she was kissing him, and he was lifting her in his arms, and her legs were wrapped about him, as though she belonged there. And she did. Without breaking the caress, he returned her to the bed, lowering her to sit on the edge of it, coming to his knees at the bedside. She released his lips and pulled away. "No," she said. "I do not wish you on your knees."
"You shall like it when I show you all the things I intend to do to you from this particular position," he said, his lips finding purchase at the soft, warm skin of her neck before opening and giving him access to the line of her jaw and the lobe of her ear.
"Leave me here to worship you, love, and I shall make it worth your while."
He took her lips again, loving the little sigh she released, the way she went limp at the touch, as though she could not resist him, as though he was as irresistible as she was. The caress lingered until her hands fell to his shoulders and she pushed him back again, putting space between them. "I don't want you on your knees, Alec," she repeated. "I want you." His hands threaded into her hair.
"I am with you, love. I couldn't be anywhere else."
She shook her head. "You don't understand." She leaned back. "I don't want you with me. I want us with each other." When he finally understood the words, they were like a blow to the side of the head. He sat back on his heels there, on the floor of her tiny room under the stairs, and watched her for a long moment as colour rose in her cheeks, and she said, "Do you see, love? I want us together." She wanted them equal. Not a guardian and his ward, not a duke and a miss, and not the other. He swallowed, unable to find any other words but,
"I see."
She had once more ruined him. She saw the truth in him and smiled, wide and gleeful, before she went to her knees on the bed, shucking the coat and shirt she'd worn as a disguise that evening, as though she'd removed men's clothing from her person a dozen times, revealing her high, lovely breasts, soft and perfect as peaches and fresh cream. His mouth watered, and he raised his attention to her auburn hair cascading around her shoulders, and then she reached for the fall of her trousers. He watched her for a long moment, his eyelids growing heavy with desire, before he could not help himself.
Stop, he growled,
his gaze riveted to those long, lovely fingers where they lingered at the fastening of her trousers. She stopped. He rubbed the back of one hand across his mouth, aching for her, afraid of her.
Are you going to do it? She whispered.
With effort, he rose his gaze to her.
Do what?
She smiled at him, not the coquettish smile he'd seen on women before in this particular situation, but something far more dangerous. She looked happy, gleeful, eager.
You could make her happy if you decide to do so.
He pushed the thought away. He didn't want Stanhope here. And then she replied, and the Earl was the farthest thing from his mind. Are you going to tell me what you want me to do? He was assaulted with images, with hundreds of ideas of what he'd like her to do for him, to herself. He returned his attention to the trousers, a half dozen buttons in the way of what he wanted, and he did as he was asked.
Take them off.
Her smile turned utterly satisfied. With pleasure. The trousers were gone before he had time to appreciate her skill with the fastenings, shucked across the room, revealing bare legs that promised sin and salvation all at once. She lay back on the tiny bed, one long arm covering her breasts and the other cutting a swath across her beautiful rounded stomach, the hand covering the place he wanted more than anything in the world. Go on, Your Grace, she teased, knowing that with every breath, with every movement, with every stunning smile, she made him mad with desire. What can I give you next?
Open for me.
The command shocked him, even as her lips fell open in a stunning, surprised inhale. For a moment, he thought he'd gone too far. And then she did, spreading her beautiful thighs wide on the narrow bed. She did not, however, move her hand. He raised a brow.
Minx.
She smiled. You will have to be more specific about your desires, Your Grace. She was magnificent.
I desire you, he said.
The smile widened, but the hand did not move. Much more specific. He unclasped the pin on his shoulder, holding his plaid in place, and her eyes widened, her fingers tightening so barely that one might not even notice. One might not notice, that was, if one were not fully riveted to the woman in question, hard and hot and desperate for her. He was naked in seconds, his cock hard and aching for her. Her eyes widened, and she, damn it, she licked her lips, her gaze trained on him. More specific, even, than that.
I desire that you move your hand, lass, he said,
approaching the bed and staring down at her, reveling in her glorious nudity.
So that I might have a closer look at you.
She raised a brow. Only a look? Is that some kind of Scottish half measure? His lips twitched at her teasing, and he let his burr take over.
Once I've seen you, lass, if you're lucky, I might touch you, and once I've touched you, you can wager I'll be tasting.
She laughed then, wild and free, like the Highlands. I think, Mr. Stewart, she whispered, moving her hand, revealing a thatch of secret, stunning auburn hair, that if you'll be touching me, it'll be you who is lucky. And she was right. He was the luckiest man alive. For the night. To honour that good fortune, he laid himself down next to her and proceeded to do all he'd promised, whispering to her the whole time, revealing her secrets in the little room as he made love to her.
So soft, he said at her ear,
his lips lingering over the soft skin of her neck.
So wet.
He licked, worrying the lobe between his teeth as he slipped a finger through her folds, drenched with her desire.
So warm,
he said, that finger sliding deep and returning again and again, swirling and petting and stroking until she was writhing beneath him and he moved to her breast. He licked long and slow before taking the straining tip between his lips and sucking, soft and rhythmic, in time to the movements of his hand. And she came off the bed like she was pulled on a string, one hand threading into his hair, the other finding his, strong and sure below, slowing it as she rode her climax to its glorious end. And it was glorious. She turned pink with pleasure, with excess. And and when she settled, sighing his name and opening those eyes to meet his, he could see that her thoughts had scrambled. She dragged his mouth to hers once more, kissing him slow and deep and thorough. And when she released him, he said,
I desire it again.
Her eyes went wide, and her lips curved into a little O. He moved, this time spreading her thighs apart with his shoulders and lifting her to his mouth with one arm, turning her into his banquet, loving her with his hands and mouth until she came apart in his arms, his name first a whisper and then a scream on her lips. And when she'd collapsed once more in a heap on the bed, he pressed soft kisses to her stomach and whispered,
You, Lily, it will always be you. Everything, always you.
Until her breathing returned to normal, and he growled,
Again,
before pressing his mouth to the center of her, where she glistened warm and pink and sated.
Alec, she sighed, barely able to find the words. Please, love, what of you?
As though there were anything in the world that would give him more pleasure than the taste of her on his lips and the sound of her in his ears and the feel of her in his hands. One last time.
Once more, he said. Once more.
And he made love to her with slow, slick strokes, gentle and slow, honouring her, worshipping her, pleasuring her until she found her rhythm once more, moving in time to his strokes, to her own desire. Until she came again, hard and long and magnificent, her hands in his hair and his name on her lips. This was what he would think of when he was old. He had destroyed her with pleasure. She was in pieces on the bed, without ability to move or even think, when he came up to lie beside her, to hold her, she trembled weak from his hands and mouth and words. She turned into him, his large warm arms coming around her. You betrayed me, she said to his broad chest, rubbing her cheek across the crisp hair there, unable to summon the energy to say it with more conviction. We were to be with each other.
And we were.
She shook her head. You did not take your pleasure. He pressed a kiss to her forehead.
That was the most pleasurable experience of my life, love. Sleep.
The words rumbled beneath her ear. As though she could sleep with him there, with the hard length of him against her thigh like a promise. She was not going to sleep, not until he had received his pleasure as openly and as thoroughly as she had. Not until she had given it to him. No, she whispered, sending her hand over the planes of his chest, enjoying the way the muscles of his torso tightened beneath her touch, and he hissed his desire. I've other plans.
Lily.
He spoke her name in the flickering candlelight, his hand coming to hers, halting it on its path, just as her fingers found the place where soft hair grew thicker.
You don't have to.
She turned her face into the warmth of him, pressing a soft kiss to the skin on his chest, and another, until his breath was coming harsher, and she could feel the deep pulse of his heart beneath her lips. Only then did she slide her tongue out in a little circle, honouring him, adoring the way he drew tight like a bowstring at the touch. She moved, her lips sliding down his body over his torso, his free hand coming to her hair as he spoke her name, low and dark and wonderful. She imagined he intended to stop her, but then she was licking over the planes of his stomach, breathing him in, and he was trembling at the touch and, thank heaven, forgot to stop her. Not even when she moved her hand, sliding his away, clearing a path to the place she desperately wanted to reach. She leaned back, reveling in the size and strength of him, glorying in the fact that he was hers in that moment, as her mouth watered and her fingers itched to claim him, and then ran her lips up the hard, straining length of him, breathing his name as he arched off the bed with a wicked curse, and she gloried in the power he'd given her. The strength, the pride that this man was not only hers, but that she was about to give him all he desired. She licked over the tip of him, the salt and sweet of him tempting her even as he groaned her name, his hands coming to her, fingers sliding into her hair, not pulling to or pushing away, but cradling her with near unbearable gentleness. Once more, she whispered his words back to him, and the groan deepened, his fingers flexing against her as she parted her lips and took him slow and deep, adoring the feel of him, the steel of him, the desire that rioted through him, and through her as well, as he gasped his pleasure in a wicked, tempting echo of what she had experienced only minutes earlier. She'd never in her life wanted anything more than Alec's pleasure, and that desire drove her further, licking and sucking and drawing him as deep as she could, playing with speed and sensation, finding the places that seemed to drive him wild and trying desperately to send him over the edge. His hands tightened in her hair.
I can't, Lily. Please, if you don't, I won't be able to.
The words were a growl, deep and fierce.
Lily!
I don't want you to stop, she whispered to the pulsing, beautiful head of him. I don't want you to hold back. I want you to give it to me, all of it. Let me revel in you. He whispered her name, dark and sinful in the little room, and Lily thrummed with power, with passion, with her own desire as she sucked deeper, licked, found a rhythm that brought them both to the edge, a string of Gaelic on his lips as he gave himself up to her, to passion, and finally, finally, with her name on his lips, to release. She stayed with him, adoring him as he basked in his pleasure, before ultimately lifting her to lay with him, pulling her into his arms, running his hands over her naked skin, whispering long strings of his lovely lyric language against her hair, interspersing the words with soft, lingering kisses until she shivered and he pulled a blanket over them both.
That was...
The words were barely there, a rumble beneath her ear as much as anything else, trailing off, his thought incomplete. She smiled, kissing his chest. I agree.
Lily,
he whispered, those massive hands still moving, cloaking her in warmth and love and security.
My Lily.
She closed her eyes and sighed. Yours. His hand stilled at the word, just barely, just enough for her to shift at the change, and he began anew, long, languid glides that tempted her with comfort she'd never before experienced.
Sleep, he said.
And there was something in the soft, rough word that sent a thread of unease whispering through her, but she was too exhausted to consider it, too consumed with him to be able to think of a time he might not be with her, touching her, a part of her. His hand stroked over and over, until avoiding sleep became an impossibility. Lily closed her eyes and pressed closer to him with a final soft plea. Be here in the morning. We shall start anew. And then, from the edge of sleep, do not leave me. Be here. Be mine. Not 2 hours later, she woke in the darkness, cold and alone, beneath the covers of her Berkeley Square bed. The curtains were open, but the London night beyond was dark as soot, the darkness that came when it was nearly dawn. She sat up to light the candle on the bedside table, knowing even before the spark turned to flame what she would find. He was gone. Tears came, desperate and unavoidable, as she looked around the room, this room that she'd chosen because she'd once been so lonely and now fairly breathed with the memory of him, of his touch, of his kiss, of his past and the way it destroyed him even as it made him the man he was. He'd left her. She threw her feet over the edge of the bed, and Hardy sprang awake, a yelp of surprise waking Angus, who slept at the threshold of the room. Hope slammed through her. The dogs were here. He had not left. And still, the thread of uncertainty remained. She set one hand to Hardy's big head, staring down into the dog's soulful eyes. Where is he? Hardy sighed longingly, and Lily understood the pathetic sound better than any she'd heard in her life. He had left, no doubt thinking she should be without him, no doubt thinking she could be without him. That was when she saw the letter. On the desk, propped up next to the still-covered painting, was an envelope in familiar écru. He'd left her a note, drafted on her own paper, propped on a pair of baby boots, the ones with red leather soles. He had left her. Dreading the truth, Lily reached for the envelope, her name in bold black scrawl across the face, opened it.
The diary is yours. The money due to you today, as well. And, of course, the painting, to do with what you wish. I am leaving you Angus and Hardy. They have loved you from the start and will be able to protect you better than I ever could. Not that you need them. You have always been strong enough to keep yourself safe. You are the most glorious woman I have ever known. Beautiful and passionate and powerful beyond measure. And no man will ever be worthy of you, especially not me. You asked me once for freedom, Lily, and though I have been a terrible guardian, today I can give you that. Freedom to leave this place or stay in it, to be a queen of London and the world, to have the life you wanted, the life you dreamed of. The children, the marriage, the little feet that fit these silly red boots, whatever you choose. Never doubt I will think of you, Lily, then and now. Happy birthday, Mochria. Alec.
The words swam with tears. He'd left her. Lillian Hargrove had been alone for the lion's share of her existence. Since the moment she'd lost her father, she'd lived beneath the servant stairs of a ducal mansion, between the glittering world of the aristocracy and the more ordinary, common one. She'd learned to be alone here, in this room, in this house, living a quiet half-life that lacked the promise of her dreams, and then a scandal that threatened even that. And then Alec Stewart had broken down her door and vowed to protect her. And her life had changed, and her dreams had changed. Now they were of him alone, and he thought himself unworthy of them. Her whole life she'd been terrified of loneliness, of living out her years with no one to share them with. And now, here, she knew the truth, that she'd trade a lifetime of the loneliness that had once so threatened her for a single day with Alec, without hesitation. For an intelligent man, the Duke of Warwick was a proper fool. He'd left her, like Endymion, choosing an eternity of dreams over a lifetime with the goddess he loved. There had been a time when Lily had thought she understood the choice. After all, dreams could feel terribly real. But now that she had held him in her arms, laughed with him, loved him, dreams were nothing compared to the reality of him. Her gaze settled on the painting, wrapped in cloth, leaning against the chest where she'd once kept her dreams. Dreams she'd thought destroyed by scandal. Scandal that had brought him to her. Scandal that he'd taught her to bear, unashamed. He could not leave her. Not when she needed him so much. Not when she loved him so well. Not when he had so thoroughly become her dreams. If he wanted her to put those little boots to use, he could damn well fill them himself. Chapter 22. Lily Laid Bare. Mismuse or Misused. All of London had chosen to attend the final morning of the Royal Exhibition, and why would they not? The legend of Derek Hawkins' masterwork had been broadcast throughout the city's rags, shouted by newsboys and whispered in ballrooms. It was not the artwork London came to see, however. It was the scandal. Lovely Lily revealed.
It's horrible, really, what he did, Alec heard at his elbow as he pressed through the crowd.
No girl deserves that. On the surface, the words were sympathetic, but they were injected with such salacious glee that he gritted his teeth. She should not have sat for it if she did not wish for it to be made public, came an utterly disdainful reply, and he realized that attending the exhibition might have been a poor idea, for he wanted to murder every person who spoke ill of Lily. It was easy to throw stones at scandal when one's own tales were still secret. He pushed himself through the throngs into the exhibition hall. And there, a woman nearby said, loudly enough to be heard, but softly enough to pretend it wasn't for his benefit. The guardian. A terrible one, it seems, another said on a gleeful giggle. And am I surprised? Look at the man, clothed as a barbarian. There are ladies present. We can see his knees. And what lovely knees they are, the first replied, her words thick with innuendo. It was not the most ladylike sentiment he'd ever heard expressed, considering these two were so angry at his mere presence, but Alec let the comment pass. He could not murder all the gossips in London, no matter how well he would like to. In less than an hour, he'd be high atop his curricle, going hell for leather up the Great North Road, headed home. Not home. He would never be home again, not as long as Lily was elsewhere. He cleared his throat at the thought. Yes, home. England had always been his ruin, and today was no different. Indeed, if the last 10 days had done nothing else, they had shown him the truth of his father's curse. It did not matter that he left the woman he loved. Everyone I have ever loved has left. She'd said the words to him at the start of all this, when he'd convinced her to stay, to face London, to marry another, when he'd convinced her that he'd save her. And he'd vowed to find her a man whom she could love, a man who would not soil her with his past and who would give her everything she'd ever dreamed. Yes, Alec had left her, but to a better life, one that would let her open that damn trunk and use all the things inside if she wished it, one that would give her a perfect gentlemanly hero and a beloved family and a happily ever after that he stopped, that he would give everything to be a part of. When he'd arrived in London 10 days earlier, she'd asked him for freedom, for choice, and last night he gave it to her. The hall was packed wall to wall like a tin of fish, everyone straining to see the dais at the front of the long, massive room, and Alec had never been more grateful for his size. He did not have to strain. He was tall enough to see Hawkins' decimation play out from his place, and though he wished to push to the front and set his fist in the man's face, he knew better. He would watch the reveal of Jewel and leave amid the shock and awe that would ensue. And he would go back to Scotland, in peace, and forget this place. Liar. He shifted on his feet at the thought and crossed his arms.
Do you think he's here to call Hawkins out? A man said from nearby. For Hawkins' sake, I hope not. Look at the man. There's a reason they call him the Scottish Brute. Perhaps he will call him out.
The last was spoken on a breath of anticipation. Alec set his jaw. Duels were for hot-headed children. He had other plans for Hawkins. As he stood there, waiting for the pompous scoundrel to arrive, Hawkins was receiving notice that his membership to the Fallen Angel had been rescinded. Duncan West most certainly had friends in powerful places. Similarly, an announcement would soon be made that several exceedingly wealthy aristocrats, the Duke of Warwick included, were funding a new theatrical venture. It would go head-to-head with the Hawkins Theatre and make it very difficult for him to find patrons of his own. But this morning would be the worst of all Hawkins' punishments. It would strike him hard and fast in his pompous, arrogant face. And so Alec was here to watch, because he might not be able to have Lily, but he could have this, her honour. And then smug-faced Hawkins was taking the stage along with some other Englishmen, and the crowd quieted until the only sound was Alec's beating heart.
As you know, the older man began, the Royal Academy of Arts selects a single piece to be revealed on the final day of the annual exhibition, a piece that we believe is so indicative of the quality of British artistry that it moves directly from here to the entryway of the British Museum and then tours the country. This year, the artist selected for this great honour is Derek Hawkins.
No mention of the fact that Hawkins destroyed a reputation in the balance. No mention of the fact that Hawkins was an arse, either. Hawkins preened beneath the rapt attention of the crowd, and it occurred to Alec that there was never in history a man who deserved what was coming to him more. And then Hawkins began to talk, something about genius, about his gift to the world, about his exceeding talent, and then he said,
I only wish the model were here, so you might all compare the two and know that my talent has turned brass into gold beyond value.
Paupering the man was not enough. He deserved to die of something slow and painful.
And so, adoring fans, I shall not keep you from it any longer.
He stepped back, and with a flourish,
I present Beauty Bestowed.
With the utterly arrogant title echoing through the exhibition hall, Alec actually found something to enjoy about that morning, because when the curtain fell and Jewel was revealed, that smug smile would fall and Derek Hawkins would be ruined. The curtain fell, and a dropped pin might have echoed throughout the silent hall, thousands of people within so thoroughly captivated. Not by Jewel, by Lily. She'd returned the painting, and it was a masterpiece. She was draped across a settee in a dark room, light playing off her beautiful skin, the curves and peaks and valleys of her glorious body highlighted by skilled brushwork and colour that seemed at once impossible and utterly perfect. But it was not her body that drew Alec's attention. It was her face, the way she looked directly at the viewer without timidness or shame, without hesitation, as though the moment depicted involved two people alone, Lily and the viewer. It was a painting that lacked regret, and it was hers more than it would ever be Hawkins. She'd returned the painting. Of course she had. It was the act of a woman who would not be shamed, who would not be made a scandal without her permission. And though it was stunning, the painting paled in comparison to the woman herself, magnificent and unparalleled. He was struck deep with pride. He would never let her go, not after this, not after seeing this act of supreme courage, one that would forever inspire him to match it. He wanted to spend his life by her side, attempting to be the man that this woman, this brave, strong, beautiful woman, deserved. He was too selfish to let another have her. He wasn't going home to Scotland. He was going home to her. And once he was through telling her precisely what he thought of her skulking about in the London night, he was going to win her back. Because if the reveal of this portrait meant anything, it meant this. His Lily was exceedingly unhappy with him for leaving her. Which made perfect sense, of course, as it had been an act of supreme stupidity. He would make it up to her. He would convince her to choose him as well, and he was going to marry her and spend the rest of his life making it up to her, with pleasure. It was only then, transfixed by the stunning painting and the keen knowledge that it paled in comparison to the woman he loved, that he remembered his vow to Lily. The promise he'd made never to look at the painting. She was right, of course. It was not for him. Just as she was not for the world. The instant the realization came, Alec turned his back to the portrait. He was already moving, headed to her, to find her, to marry her, to love her. He did not have far to go as she was there, waiting for him, wearing his plaid. She stood tall and proud like a goddess, uncaring that they stood a stone's throw from her nude. But Lily did not look to the room, not to the dais, not anywhere but at him, and he wanted to roar his pleasure at her unwavering attention. Twin desires shot through him, making him at once wish to lift her into his arms and carry her far from London's prying eyes, and also to grab her to him and kiss her until neither of them could think, and then get her to the nearest vicar. He didn't have a special license, another reason to loathe England. Bollocks bans, he wasn't waiting for them. It seemed they were headed to Scotland after all. He resisted the urge to carry her immediately to his curricle, however, because of the other emotion flashing in her beautiful grey eyes. Lily was furious.
I don't want your money, she said, arms akimbo, as though they were anywhere but there in front of all London, as though half a dozen heads hadn't turned their way the moment she'd spoken.
I don't want my money either. She was angry, but there was something else there, something like fear. He hated it, wanted to chase it away. He stepped toward her, and she held up a hand, stopping him with nothing but a look, like a queen.
And I most definitely don't want your dogs.
He stepped closer at the lie, close enough that he could touch her, that he could catch her if she ran.
You've ruined my dogs with your table scraps and your scratches, he said softly. They belong to you now, my love.
That's when the tears came.
Don't call me that.
He ached at the words, instantly reaching for her. She took a step backward.
No, don't you dare touch me. I've things to say.
Then I'm afraid you're going to have to stop crying because I don't think I can watch it without touching you.
She dashed an errant tear from her cheek.
I don't want any of your silly gifts, and I don't want you to send me off into the world to choose a different life. I choose this life.
He nodded.
Don't you dare nod at me, as though you've known it the whole time.
Her voice rose, and he heard the strength there.
He didn't destroy my dreams with that painting, Alec.
He knew that now. He hadn't understood before.
That painting isn't me. It's oil and canvas. He can have it. They can have it, she said, waving one long arm to the assembly. They can send it all over the world, and it will never be me. But you...
She paused, the words suddenly softer. His breath caught, hearing the accusation in her words.
You did destroy my dreams.
The words sent cold fear rioting through him. He reached for her.
No.
He stopped, and she said,
You left me. How many times did you tell me my shame was misplaced? That I deserved more, better, a man worthy of me? You were right. I do deserve all those things. More than this.
Fear became terror. Dear God, she was going to be rid of him. The air had left the room. Alec struggled to breathe. And then she said,
Do you know why I put it back? I put it back because it was wrong to deny it. This thing that is a part of me, that I refuse to be ashamed of, that you taught me not to be ashamed of. I am not ashamed of my passion, of my choices. I am not ashamed of my past, Alec.
She should not be. He opened her mouth to tell her so, but she added,
And I am certainly not ashamed of you.
Breath returned.
You want me to choose? Let me choose.
He nodded, found his voice.
Do it. Choose.
She came to him then, close enough for him to see the silver in her beautiful grey eyes.
I choose all of it, damn it. The scandal, the Scotland, the dogs, the draughty castle. I want Burns instead of Shakespeare. But most of all, I choose you, Alec Stewart, lummox, idiot, coward, cabbage-headed duke.
She paused, then added,
Against my better judgment.
She chose him. The glorious madwoman chose him. Somehow. He was the luckiest bastard in Christendom. He reached for her then, unable to resist the urge to touch her. Cradling her face in his palms, he tilted her face up to meet his, unable to find words in the flood of joy that coursed through him.
Lily.
Her hands came to rest on his.
You left me.
The words, soft and wounded, threatened to slay him.
Love.
She shook her head.
Alone. Again. Only this time it was worse. This time I knew what it was not to be alone. I knew what it was to love.
He did not know how to reply, and so he did the only thing he could think to do, not wanting to chase her away. He released her and sank to his knees. Her eyes went wide.
What are you?
It was his turn to speak.
I thought I was saving you, he said quietly,
staring up at her, adoring every inch of her, wanting her with a desperation that clawed at him, that he wondered if he would ever slake.
When I came here, I thought I was to protect you, to play the part of guardian, of saviour.
I did not need a saviour, she said.
No, Mochria, you didn't, but I did, and it was you who did the saving. Lily, you have saved me.
She reached for him.
Alec,
he bowed his head, aching for her touch.
I am yours, my love, body and soul. When I am old, I do not wish to think of you. I wish to be with you. I wish to love you.
Stand up, my love, she said,
her hands in his hair, and when he looked up, her tears were in earnest.
Please, Alec, stand.
He did, coming to his full height, his hands returning to her face and tilting it up to him so he could see her reply, whispered so softly he could barely hear it.
You, she said. You.
Always, he replied. Forever.
He kissed her then, long and deep, lifting her high in his arms until her arms were wrapped about his neck, and he held her off the floor for the caress, which lasted at once for an eternity and a heartbeat. They separated only when they'd both lost the ability to breathe, but Alec did not put her down, instead clutching her close and burying his face in the warm curve of her neck, breathing deep, willing his heart to slow. She laughed, and he lifted his head.
What is it?
We have an audience, it seems.
He shook his head. No, they're too distracted by the painting.
He growled.
How did you do it?
She grinned. Guess.
He groaned. Cecily.
I needed a boost, she said simply. But, he cut her off.
The two of you together, you're trouble. You realize I'm going to have to murder half of London now for having seen you nude.
She tilted her head. Perhaps not, though, considering no one is looking at the painting. He turned to the room, massive and packed to the gills, come to see the legendary masterpiece of Derek Hawkins. Not one observer was turned to the front of the room, however. They all, to a person, had their backs to the painting, facing far more interesting gossip. He raised a brow.
They still look at you. I don't care for it.
At least this way I am clothed, she grinned. Still a scandal, but clothed.
Nonsense.
He kissed her again, long and slow and deep, until the women around them gasped their shock.
Duchesses cannot be scandals.
Not even if we try very hard.
Well, he replied, if anyone can do it, my love, 'tis you.
I shall require a partner.
No doubt a grueling task, but one I see no way of avoiding, he teased.
She pressed her lips to his, soft and lingering, and then she said, when can we marry?
We can be in Scotland in 4 days if we leave now.
She smiled, and he caught his breath. Then I think it is time you take me home. Beauty Bestowed travelled throughout Britain and across the continent, making it as far east as St. Petersburg and as far west as New York City, exhibited in the greatest homes and museums in the world, lauded as a singular masterpiece, rivaling the Mona Lisa. But Beauty Bestowed was different from other portraits. It was not a painting of a nameless muse. It was the portrait of Lillian Stewart, née Hargrove, 21st Duchess of Warwick, and the scandal of 1834. And whenever it was exhibited, wherever, her story was told. Their story was told. The story of lovely Lily and the Duke who so adored her that he tossed her over his shoulder and carried her off to Scotland on the last morning of the Royal Art Exhibition, under the watchful, envious eye of all London. It is no wonder that none can remember the name of the artist. Epilogue.
City celebrates. Departed Duke and Duchess descend. 10 months later. The door to the sitting room between the master and mistress's chambers at 45 Berkeley Square flew open, ricocheting off the wall as the Duke of Warwick pulled his Duchess inside.
Alec, she whispered with a mix of glee and horror. Someone will hear.
Don't care, he growled, closing the door behind them and pressing her against it. You should be grateful I did not break it down to get you inside. Come here, wife.
Lily wrapped her arms around his neck, loving the feel of his hands on the bodice of her dress, wishing the dress gone.
What's happened to you?
You danced with too many men tonight, he said against her lips. They all wanted a look at the queen of the season. I didn't like it. Poncy Englishman. Stanhope was a last straw.
She laughed at that. The Earl of Stanhope was the least threatening man in England, now that he'd found himself a lovely young widow, who was purported to be quite wealthy. Considering the way the Earl and Countess lingered together at the edge of the ballroom, seemingly unaware of their surroundings, Lily thought he'd made a very good match indeed. As had she, pulled back to look at her husband, moonlight streaking through their bedchamber. You once wanted me married to one of those Englishmen.
An error in judgment.
Indeed, she said, and he kissed her deep and thorough, pulling away only to run his lips over her jaw until she sighed her pleasure. I needed that. A low laugh rumbled from him.
Am I neglecting you, love?
His hands moved to her skirts, and Lily ached for his touch as a silk rose higher and higher.
It's only been a few hours, but I'm happy to redouble my efforts.
You do your very best, Your Grace, she said, gasping as his strong hands found the skin of her thighs above her stockings. But sometimes a woman surrounded by England needs a taste of Scotland. He stilled at that, his head coming up, whiskey-coloured eyes finding hers in the darkness.
What did you say?
She smiled. I know we've only been here a week, but I miss home. In the 10 months since they'd left London, Lily had made a home for herself at Dunworthy, learning the nuances of the estate's distillery, glorying in the warm Scottish summer, wrapping herself in wool from the castle's sheep in the winter. When her husband was not keeping her warm, which was rare, she went back for another kiss before adding, And you taste of it.
You like it? He asked,
and the doubt in the question surprised her. It had been months since she'd heard it last. On late nights when it would creep into his thoughts, and he would offer to bring her back to England if it would make her happy. But England did not make her happy, not the way he did. She kissed him again, deliberately misunderstanding. Yes, husband, I like the way you taste, a great deal. Doubt was replaced with desire.
I meant Scotland, minx.
She matched his look. Aye, Mochria, I like it very much. He growled at the words in perfect Scottish brogue and let out a long sigh of his own.
Well then, why in hell are we here?
Because you have a sister who begged for a season. Kate had been thrilled to receive Lily at Dunworthy when they had returned from London, excited beyond measure to have a sister, just as Lily had been. The two became fast friends, and within weeks Alec had agreed that Kate could have the season of which she'd dreamed. It had not occurred to him that the season would require months in London.
Let's leave her here and go home.
No. Did you see her tonight? Her happiness?
No, he lied. Between the two of you, I spent the entirety of the evening wanting to beat off London's male population with a large stick.
He kissed her again, deep and lovely.
Let's go home, lass. I want to make love to you in the mist.
She shivered at the words. They have mist in London.
Not Scottish mist.
Her laugh was replaced by a long groan when his hands moved again, sliding higher toward the place where she wanted him quite desperately. He cursed soft and wicked.
Duchess.
Hmm.
Why aren't you wearing underthings?
She sighed. For this precise reason.
And did you not tell me so at the ball? Do you realize what I could have done with that information? We could have defiled several of the Eversley House sitting rooms.
I intended it, she said, willing him higher, aching for him to give her what she desired. But I was waylaid,
she stopped. Between ensuring that Kate received the proper introductions and the Duke of Montcliff.
What about Montcliff?
I'm feeling quite proud of myself, honestly. The Duke of Montcliff added £100,000 to the scholarship fund tonight. Inspired by her own childhood and Alec's past, Lily had thrown herself into the work of ensuring that children who lacked funds or connection had the means to secure the futures they desired, the ones they deserved. She wished to give possibility to as many children as she could, and the stoic Duke of Montcliffe's surprising donation had made that goal even more real this evening. Her announcement garnered Alec's attention.
100,000, honestly.
She reached for him, her fingers feathering through the hair at his temple. Remarkable, no? Think of the choices they'll make. Think of the freedom they'll have. He bowed his head, leaning into her touch, before he took her in his arms once more.
You, my love, are remarkable.
She blushed at the praise, even as she basked in it. Apparently he liked the idea of being in partnership with us. Did you know that we are society darlings? It's a disappointment, really. I'd thought scandal had more stick.
Disappointing indeed, he said,
distracted again, turning her to face the door, working at the buttons down the back of her gown.
I am happy to scandalize you now, if you like.
If you do not mind very much, Your Grace.
Not at all, he teased at her ear. I want to look at these missing undergarments.
He began to work at the buttons.
Must there be so many of these?
She laughed. You need a button hook.
I beg your pardon, he said with a front. I need no such thing.
His hands went to the top of the dress, and Lily gasped as he gave the dress a mighty tug, sending buttons flying across the room. You ruined my dress, she gasped, not caring in the slightest.
I shall buy you a dozen more, he said,
as the dress fell in a pool of silk at their feet.
It was worth it. Turn around.
She did, proud and fearless, eager for his gaze, for his touch, for him.
You are glorious.
She smiled, heat coming high on her cheeks. I've something for you. He raised a brow.
I see that.
The smile became a grin. Something else. She took his hand then, leading him to the entrance to the Duchess's bedchamber, which served as a wardrobe and private office rather than sleeping quarters, which was best, as the bed was currently occupied by dogs. Two massive grey tails thumped at their appearance, and Alec went to greet the hounds as Lily crossed to the little desk in the corner of the room. She lit a candle, revealing the box she'd left for just this moment. Lifting the parcel and turning back to face her husband, she said, I had a conversation earlier this week with Bernard.
Love, I have to say, you're invoking the name of our solicitor standing in the nude, candlelight flickering across your stunning skin, is not precisely how I wish the evening to proceed.
It turns out, husband, that tomorrow is your birthday. He quickly calculated the date.
It is, as a matter of fact.
And we shall have a serious conversation about you keeping such information from me, I assure you. As I intend to do with your sister, I shouldn't need a solicitor to apprise me of such a thing. But thank goodness for Bernard.
Yes, I've always found him a great asset.
She laughed at the dry words, and he came closer, pointing to the box.
Is that my present?
It is, as a matter of fact.
May I have it?
Do you deserve it? She teased. He did, of course. She'd never known a man so deserving. His gaze darkened.
Only tell me what I might do to earn it, my love, and I shall do it with pleasure.
The words sent a thrum of desire through her as she imagined all the things he might do for her, to her, the things she might do in return. Her breath quickened, and he drew nearer still, his fingers coming to the box, removing it from her hands as he said, soft and low and liquid,
I do not require a present. I only require you.
She shook her head to clear it of her own desire. No, she said. Open it. He did, sliding the top from the small square parcel and peered inside. Lily was riveted to his handsome face, made even more beautiful in the flickering golden candlelight, his perfect, tempting lips already curving in anticipation. And then anticipation was gone, replaced with confusion. and then surprise, and then joy as he reached into the box and extracted the pair of little white boots, complete with red leather soles. Joy turned to adoration when he looked at her.
Your boots.
Lily smiled. No longer mine. Alec was on his knees then, pulling her to him, pressing kisses across the soft, bare skin of her stomach, whispering in Gaelic to the child who grew within.
You have given me so much, he said finally to Lily. And now...
Lily's hands came to his head, reveling in her proud, strong Scot, the man who had given her everything she'd ever dreamed, holding him, loving him. They stayed like that for a long time, until the Duke of Warwick stood, lifted his Duchess into his arms, carried her to their very sturdy bed, and loved her, quite thoroughly, in return. This is Justine Eyre. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of A Scot in the Dark, Scandal and Scoundrel, Book 2, by Sarah McLean. This programme was produced by Elgin Productions, executive producer Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2016 by Sarah Trabucchi. Production copyright 2016 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.